Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 17th, 2013. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, you know those commercials where they, for those high energy drinks, where they say you hit that crash at like 2:30, 3:30 in the afternoon, and you need to take the, you know, take these 5 hour energy drinks or whatever they are that you don't. Well, we're taping the show right around that time today, so Scott, no pressure on you, but you're gonna have to be pretty interesting and pretty damn funny. Keep me awake this week. So
that's all right. I just pounded a couple Four Locos, and I don't know if you've ever had any of those. But not only do you not crash around 3:30, you actually crash your car because you're just so high on stuff. So I'll bring the energy, man. You just hang back and keep your footing on the record button.
If I fall asleep, just ignore it. I usually only have like cat naps, so I'm sure to wake up before the show is over.
Well, speaking of not enough energy anymore, and yeah. Certainly can't criticize him at all, but Doyle Brunson tweeted, first of all, I love the fact that he tweets, or more likely has somebody tweet for him, right? Tweeted this week that he will no longer be playing in any of the World Series of Poker events. It has nothing to do with politics or money or anything like that. He just, frankly, says the events just last too long, and Father Time has caught up to him at the ripe young age of 79 years old.
It's not shocking. And he probably will end up playing like the main event or something. Who knows? But it is not shocking. I mean, 79, and to sit there. And then the way the temperature is there, if you go deep and there's, it's freezing in that Amazon room, and then he's cold and then he's hot, and then long days like that, and he can't go when he wants to go, and that's the whole beauty of cash games that you can, and I don't blame them. I don't blame them.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about later in the show more about the World Series this year, but those are marathon events. You're getting there, in the early morning, early afternoon when it starts, and it's going to go really late into the night, and then you got to turn around and come back tomorrow. It's a multi-day event, which I believe every World Series event this year is at least a two-day event, if not three-day event. I think it is one of these, we always like to talk about how poker's the sport that anybody can play, young, old, male, female, Martian, earthling. But particularly at the World Series, I think it's one of these events that, just by design, I think it's harder for people to participate at a higher level the older they get, and I don't think it's a big reason, but I think it's a real tiny reason that we see so many of these young guns dominating out there now.
That's perfectly acceptable. I mean, we've heard numerous sources where they say around 50 you start to lose your sharpness and whatever. And now we're looking at somebody who's almost 80, so he's 30 years past the year where they're saying that is the Mendoza line for quality poker. So I agree 100% that, the odds of somebody 50 and older winning a marathon like a World Series main event is so. I mean, I wonder what the odds are on that, and we'll find out later. That we probably will never find out. But
yeah.
But no, really, it's crazy. And I don't blame him. What I wanted to say was, you bring up his age, 79, and I'll always remember the first time I met Doyle. I met him at Foxwoods, and I sat down next to him and asked him if it was okay to interview him. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. Now, this was 4 or 5. This was about maybe 6 years ago when he was like 73 or so. Yeah, because it was before the magazine.
Yeah.
And so he was very gracious, answered every question I had for him, everything, talked about everything. It was just before that whole Doyle Brunson's been arrested, you know, which he wasn't. I'm sitting there talking to him. He's 73, and a guy walks by, one of those typical guys that really aren't too bright and want to impress their lady friend with them and stuff, and he walks up to Doyle while we're sitting there together, and we're actually, like, behind the rope, you know, and the guy's like, hey, you're Doyle Brunson, and I love how they say that, because it's like he's telling Doyle something he doesn't know. And then he goes, hey, can I, just want to say hi and can I shake your hand and whatever. So Doyle, of course, being as gracious as he is, shakes his hand. And then the guy turns to his wife or his girlfriend. And he's like, that's Doyle Brunson. She goes, yeah. He goes, he's been playing poker for 75 years. Doyle looks at me and he's like, yeah, takes all kinds. You know, I mean, he's like, he's only 73. He says he's been playing poker for 75 years, and it was just that kind of moment where he was, even saying it like that, he was just really being really gracious anyway, you know what I mean? But it's hard to believe that even back then, it was 73. He was 73, and it seems like ages ago, and he was still cranking along playing main events and stuff. Absolutely crazy. So to say now at 79 it's happening, to me it's remarkable that it didn't happen a decade ago or more.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, everybody ages a little bit differently. I was watching, I know you probably, I shouldn't know whether you still watch Survivor or not. I think you do.
Yeah.
But, or it's the finale this weekend. Rudy from season one was on there.
Yep.
And he's like, what, 85 now, I think
he was? Yeah, it was crazy. He's like 83 or 85. It was unbelievable.
And he looked like he was 61.
Yeah.
I mean, he really looked amazing. And then I was telling my wife when we were watching, I'm like, you know what? Some people just age completely different. I mean, I've seen, like, 60-year-old people that are just, their bodies are spent. And this guy was 85. Of course, he was a Navy SEAL in good shape his whole life and everything. But to say, you know, it's tough. And certainly, Doyle's not a frail 79-year-old, but he's been getting around in his little wheelchair for a while now. And, you know, all that stuff kind of adds up. I think the bottom line is just it's kind of sad. There's going to be 6,500 people more playing in the main event this year, and it's just kind of weird that that we're kind of upset that one guy isn't playing. But
yeah.
That's really kind of speaks to his reputation in the poker community.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Well, people that probably we wish wouldn't play in the main event, and probably won't. Some interesting stuff. Some audio tapes from the Ultimate Bet scandal were released this week. Travis Makar, is it Makar or Maker?
I was going to say Maker, but because it's R at the end like that, I don't know. It's M-A-K-A-R, so let's just say Makar.
I feel bad. His name's been in the news for years now, and I just never heard anybody pronounce it. But anyhow, Travis. He's the computer expert at the center. People have been releasing most of the information about the Ultimate Bet cheating scandal. This week he did another what they call data dump.
Yeah.
And included in it was a roughly 3-hour audio recording of Russ Hamilton and Ultimate Bet executives and lawyers discussing the scandal before it became public. And on those recordings, Hamilton said he stole between $16 and $18 million from fellow players, using this quote-unquote God mode on the site, which allowed him to see players' whole cards. And during the discussion, they also kind of laid out, or Hamilton kind of laid out rules on who would be paid back and who would. Kind of decided on his own. He's like, this guy owes me some money, so I'm not going to pay him back. And this guy I don't like, I'm not going to pay him back. But this guy I will pay back. Really kind of crazy stuff, right? And then Ultimate Bet members on the call also discussed how to limit the liability for the scandal. And also, very importantly, agreed to keep Phil Hellmuth in the dark about it. Didn't want to tell him that it happened, and just kind of wanted to give him some plausible deniability. Of course, after all this came out, Hellmuth issued a statement saying that he made a horrible read. Funny. Judging the character that people associated with Ultimate Bet is obviously very disgusted that this happened. And one of the guys on this call was Helmuth's former personal attorney.
Jeez.
Talk about another knife in the gut.
Well, the thing about the laid out the rules part, is I was kind of confused by that. Is that where he, like, told the or he like he was the only one who laid out these own rules for himself, or was he like, were there people who were in charge of certain things and he said, hey, when this guy loses money to me, just give it back to him? Or I don't understand how that, what did that mean?
Well, yeah, there's a lot about this. Well, first of all, let's say it's a 3-hour audio recording.
Yeah.
I didn't actually listen to it. Ain't nobody got time for that. So I've just been reading the summaries of it. But a couple of things that I think were interesting to me. One, it appears, at least through some of the reporting that I read, that Russ is the one that taped this, recorded it, whatever you want to say. I don't believe the other people knew they were being recorded. So part of me, which is very interesting, the timing of this, there's a new retrospective on All the President's Men and Watergate that came out that I watched. And, you know, talking about one of the comments from one of the participants in that said, you know, some of the amazing part of the Nixon tapes was that these people didn't realize they were being recorded and were incredibly candid. And in terms of historical value, that's amazing. Now, obviously, this UB thing, tremendously down on the totem pole in importance compared to that. But the same thing is that, you know, first of all, I don't think anybody should ever be recorded without their knowledge. I mean, one, it's against the law. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it happens kind of gives you a little bit more unvarnished, you know, imagine anybody listening to the show now thinking about how they would tailor their comments differently knowing that they were being recorded or just talking to a buddy, you know, and how drastically different that is, whether that's right or wrong. So then the other thing, the similarity between this and Nixon, I don't know, again, without listening to it and not knowing more, I'm not really sure why he recorded this. I mean, it seems incredibly incriminating to him. Now, obviously, maybe he didn't know where the conversation was going to go. I mean, I got to think he knew, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he thought it's some sort of protection, you know, here's some other people that are involved too, or what, but obviously the summaries I'm reading, you know, this, like you said, they laid out the rules. I mean, deciding, you know, this one guy owed me money because I backed him and he never paid him back, so we're even now. That kind of stuff doesn't really endear yourself to any kind of sympathy, I think. So at that point, going to get Nixon's secretary in here and put some 18.5-minute gaps in these things, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I it just shows you that this guy is just not that bright. I mean,
well, you know, just the ridiculous. I mean the whole character question is out the window from the beginning, that, you know, using this thing to be able to see whole cards. I mean, that's just so uncomprehensible to begin with, right?
Right.
But then to feel justified in doing it for people that have wronged them or for whatever reason just takes it to a whole new level, I think.
Do you think that it was the lawyer suggesting that we record it in case they have to go over testimony or something, in case they somehow find a way to prosecute him for this because he was preparing for this situation and it wasn't him recording it, but it was the lawyers telling him to record it or whatever? I mean,
well, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on TV. I can't imagine any lawyer recommending that the station where they're talking about not or covering up a criminal endeavor.
You know,
it just doesn't seem like even the worst strip mall divorce for men lawyer, I think, would not do that. So, yeah, I really do think this was Russ on his own. And like I said, it doesn't make sense to me. It's kind of mind-boggling that anybody would want this recorded or any kind of notes taken or anything like that. I think it's one of those things kind of like the fraternity initiation. You talk about it and then you burn everything and take a blood oath never to talk about it once you leave the room.
Yeah.
That's why it's so fascinating to me that this was going on. But, you know, that's a ton of money, too.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the other thing. I mean, I've already, you know, it's well beyond hell before this point. But at what point is enough too much? Enough, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess it's different for everyone. But, you know, I was kind of thinking about it today. I was on my little morning walk and, you know, the Powerball is up to like $300 million or something, right? So I'm like, ooh, got to get me out there and waste $20 of my hard-earned money to have a shot at winning that today, right? And then started thinking about, you know, $330 million, of course, after, you know, you take the lump sum and all that kind of stuff. But you know, if I had to sit down and think about how much money I need to do everything I'd want to do in my life, at most a couple million, maybe.
It's like a drug, Scott, is what it is.
You but know, that's I mean, just when, it. I mean, like I couldn't cocaine. Even imagine what I would do if I won $330 million. So, and the same thing with this guy. You know, at what point, and, you know, that $5 million I stole last week's end, I need to steal $5 million more.
Yeah.
And I know what you're saying. It is. It's, you know, obviously there's some kind of mental problem here, whether it's a, you know, a medical diagnosable mental problem or just effed in the brain. But at some point, I think you got to wake up and just look. I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? Don't you?
You would think, but again, if it's a disease, you're not going to have that problem. You're not going to have that. You're not going to all of a sudden have a conscience. You know what I mean? You're going to be like, more money, more money, more money. You know, and it's just, oh man. I don't know. Again, we're talking about somebody who just recorded himself talking about how he stole all his money from people. So I don't know if he's actually thinking on all cylinders. So.
Well, yeah, I think we can. The one thing we do for know for sure is he's not.
Yeah.
At least not on any legitimate cylinders.
Now, there was some mention of Annie Duke in there, too. I don't know.
Yeah, there was. I didn't put it on the show notes because it wasn't. I didn't think it was too dramatic. I believe in the conversation they did say that she did have access to this god mode, but never used it.
But never used it.
Which was fortunate, but. And again, I mean, we'll probably get plenty of email from our listeners because I know most of our listeners are computer geniuses out there. But I'm not really even sure why there's a god mode installed on these things.
Yeah.
It just seems like a bad idea. So I guess, again, this just came up the call. Obviously, she didn't use it. So I guess, hey, round of applause for Annie for not using it. But it seems like something where... You know, again, I don't know this stuff. I don't understand this stuff. But I would think if we started a Nanny Up online poker site tomorrow, right?
Right.
And our chief programmer came in and said, hey, Scott and Chris, let me show you this cool thing. It's called the God Mode. I would be pretty shocked, I think.
And I'd be like, don't show me. Don't show me.
Get rid of that God
Mode. Get rid of it.
Turn it into the Darwin Mode. I don't want it. I don't even want to know. I don't want anybody to have that. And the fact that it did exist and several people knew about it, again, I'm curious what our computer folks say about it. I mean, I know every thing needs like a backdoor trap. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen movies talk about this. I don't know the verbiage, right?
Right. I remember it was
pretty
standard.
I remember you
need
to have some kind of stuff like that. But this doesn't seem like something that you would need to have.
Well, when it first happened, they called them super users, I think. And I think it was pretty standard because it was done during, in the beginning, the beta testing and stuff to make sure that cards were being dealt randomly and that there weren't double duplications of aces of clubs or, you know, whatever their users needed to do, and then they were supposed to get rid of those accounts, I believe, and they didn't. I think that's what it was, because those accounts are vital to making sure the software is running properly. Yeah. But they were supposed to get rid of these super users, and they didn't. And he, as one of the owners, knew they didn't and used it. And I think that's what happened, if I remember. It was so long ago.
Yeah. You try to put it all out of our memory, too.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
But fascinating stuff. And I'm sure we'll get a lot more about it later on.
Well, you know, we have a hotline, but people apparently don't know about that either, because we don't have any calls this week that are worth putting on the show. So you got to call it 813-448-1120. You use it. We use it. You call. We use it. Whatever. We'll give you something. But right now, we're not giving anybody anything. So, 813-448-1120. Please give us a ring. Next week we'll be on the high seas. So
yeah. So you got 2 weeks to get
two weeks to get a lot of calls. But we do have a mailbag because no one stops emailing us. Which is always good. This comes from Kevin Walls. He said, "I heard you commenting on a player that had racked up her chips before she left the table." And had claimed that they were not in play. Obviously they were, and she had to use them. That got me to thinking about my rule of never racking up or even discussing with other players that I plan to leave on the next hand, round or big blind. If the other players think I'm about to leave, they'll play me differently. They would make much looser calls and put more pressure on me, thinking I don't want to play a big pot. What are your thoughts on telling the other players or indicating you're about to end your session?
Well, I'll say this. I think it's just like that. Anything in poker, it all depends on what you're using that information for. You know, obviously in his mind, he's thinking that players are going to play him differently. But the second level of that is if you know players are going to play you differently, then you can play them differently.
Yeah.
So I think that's a moot point, as long as you're thinking on those different levels. Not that I make a habit of it, but, you know, I like to let people know when I'm planning to leave for a couple reasons. Just because I'm a gentleman, or at least I pretend to be. You know, because there might be some people that are thinking about going to dinner, or there might be, like, you know, a guy at the table whose buddy's next on the list, and they've been waiting forever, and they may not decide to leave, but now that I tell them I'm leaving, then they'll know that they're sitting down. So, and I think it also helps, too, in that whole smashing win-and-run kind of scenario that we talk about a lot. You know, you win a big $500 pot, and then see ya!
Yeah.
You know, if you said before, hey, I'm leaving at this point, then it doesn't look as much, it doesn't look as douchey, even though it's not douchey at all. It's your money, your decision. So I think there are some reasons to kind of let people know. But if you're worried about people playing you differently, then I think you just got to play them differently.
You know, I don't know where I fall on this, to be honest with you. Well, first of all, I don't play poker, so I don't really have this problem anymore. But, you know, like when you and I are together and we're playing, generally we're playing different tables, different games, or you're still in a tournament and I'm playing cash or vice versa. So when I'm playing cash and you're in a tournament and you come up to me, I generally always tell you, or I'm just going to wait for my big blind. Then they can all hear me say it, and then I'm going. But when I'm playing on my own, like if I drive down to Derby Lane or Sarasota or over to Tampa Downs or something, I don't think I ever tell anybody. I think I just be like, I gotta go. All right, see you guys.
Yeah.
You know, I just, it's not that I'm, you know, like you said, you're a gentleman, and I totally understand that. I know about, you know, we call it, you know, if you want to call it, what are we talking about? You know, I'm losing my concentration here, but you know, like it never happened. You know what I mean? When you're saying to yourself, like to me, by not doing it, I don't think, you know, I'm being unethical or anything. You know what I mean? I think that I'm just, oh, I gotta go now. You know what I mean? Sometimes it hits me like that where I'm like, oh man, I gotta leave. Of course, most of the time I go broke and they know I'm leaving because I have no money, so it doesn't matter. But I'm just wondering if we think it's ethical or unethical to not. I don't think of it as unethical, but
I mean, I would say 90% of the time I play, I don't let people know when I'm leaving. I just decide, hey, I'm done and get up.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly not suggesting that people feel need to tell people that, or if you don't, then you're not a gentleman or a compassionate player. I was just pointing out there are probably positive reasons why you might want to let the table know, if you're so inclined.
Yeah.
But certainly, if somebody gets up and leaves in the middle, I mean, I don't say, hey, dude, next time, give some warning, all right?
Be a gentleman.
On orbit. What, are you raised by wolves?
Now, the one thing I will say is, that's when I'm at a casino. In the home game, I always prefer guys to let us know that they have to leave by 4:30 or whatever, because there's a couple of reasons, but the main reason for me is, okay, let's say we have eight-handed, and I know, or no, let's make it something different. Let's make it like, you know, six-handed or something. I know that if it's eight-handed right now, we can still play this game, or, you know what I mean? So if it's my call to call a game and I know the guy's going to leave in 15 minutes, I know I can call a game that will make sense to have him still playing, or you know what I mean, or something like that. So you can tailor the game you call, and plus, you know, just the fact that the game, we're not going to be able to go to the board and fill the seats in the home game. That guy's leaving, and it's going to break up the game. Now we all know what kind of, you know, okay, the game's ending at 4:30. What are my plans going to be? Do I need to go to Tampa Bay Downs right down the street from Scott's house, try to recoup some of this money, or do I, you know, ride the rush of me crushing the game today? You know, whatever it is. So for a home game, we're all friends and everything, and we can't go to the board to fill the seats, so I would prefer a little warning ahead of time as you're leaving early. So, but in a casino, I usually don't do that. I just get up, and I don't do the hit-and-run thing. I just leave when I'm done.
I would say the only thing that does bother me when people don't announce it is when they have a ton of chips in front of them. And if they wait until they decide they're out, they'll do me out, I'm done. And it takes them four or five hands to rack their chips up and get up. That's four or five hands that we could have had another player in there.
Yeah.
You know, if they would have started racking up four or five hands prior to leaving, then you get some AA. And I know that's kind of a touchy thing with a lot of players because, you know, I played a lot of places where as soon as there's a player up, there's somebody in the tendency jawing in the dealer. Hey, did you let them know?
Yeah.
Seat open?
Yeah.
Or they're screaming to themselves, seat open! So, you know, that's, you know, a couple hands that people get in. A very, very, very minor thing, but one more reason that maybe that I would kind of at least show some respect by not telling people I'm leaving, but, you know, start to rack up.
And you know what else, too? Casinos and card rooms can do some things to sort of stem this stuff, too. Like the situation that with that woman, you know, when someone has a rack out and they're racking, they shouldn't be allowed to be dealt another hand.
Yeah.
The dealer, whenever that happens, the dealer always says, you win this hand, you want a hand? And it's like, no, they're racking up. If they're racking up and leaving, then they're leaving. If they're not, then they're in and they're out, one or the other. You got to make it clear. You know, to me, I think that's what, it only causes problems like this and resentment for the other players and even the player that's in the hand, because now that lady had to put all her chips in, she lost them all. She should have left. But you'll see, I think, in the call of four, there's going to be another instance where it seems like if the dealer had done his or her job, that we wouldn't have faced this call of four. So, you know, to me, I just think a lot of it does fall on running the game. You know, we pay a rake for a reason. We tip dealers for a reason to keep the game flowing and to keep it with as few, you know, disagreements and points of contention as possible. So,
well, I mean, I like that idea. I will say that dealers can only enforce house policy as well. So, I mean,
but that should be, that's what I'm saying. That should be
house policy. If it's the house policy that the players can be dealt in if they're racking up, then, you know, I can't really fault the dealer for not.
Right. And that's why I preface it by saying card rooms and casinos can fix this by making it a house rule. You know, because really, once you're bringing that rack out, you're telling the whole world you're quitting. And the whole rule is you're not allowed to play out of your rack. So, why would you be able to rack up at the end of the shift and still play a hand because you have a, you know what I mean? It's not.
Yeah. Well, so. I think one thing that combats what I just said. Really good dealers will, as soon as they see you racking up and they ask you that, they'll go ahead and push the little button on the Bravo.
Yeah.
That your seat's open, yep. So at least it gets telegraphed, and then maybe you got that new person, you know, standing behind you waiting to sit down when you're in, and that does help. So.
Yeah.
Wow, we talked about that a lot more than I planned. You know, because it's just etiquette stuff. Stuff that just drives you crazy. That's the stuff that people want to talk about most in poker, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's really, you know, like I was saying before, I was talking about ethics, but also etiquette. You know, is it bad etiquette? Who knows? Who said there are no real actual etiquette rules to that? So, right. You know, is it bad etiquette? I don't know. But you know what? We never phone it in here at Ante Up. We always make sure we're as thorough as possible.
We beat it to its dead. All right, Kevin, we appreciate you sending the mailbag and encourage everyone else to send your mailbags. Call the Floor's Hand of the Week. It's the podcast at AnteUpMagazine.com. And here's why, because if we haven't used your stuff within a year, we're going to give you something wonderful, and sometimes it's something super wonderful, like this week, an uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Ante Up. Pick up your own decks in the Ante Up store at AnteUpMagazine.com/shop. And don't forget, the J-Design has begun a second attempt at getting Kickstarter funding for its new line of cards. Definitely please support this great company for all it does for Ante Up and our Ante Up listeners. And these uncut sheets will be on the swag shelf for another month or two. If you want one, you can't buy it, but you can get it by donating to the Kickstarter campaign. So remember, it's J-Design, spelled DESJGN, at Kickstarter.com.
Just a forewarning, I believe I'm going to get upset during the call to four, so just so you know, I might get a little heated.
Probably because it starts with Omaha 8, so.
That's the first thing. That automatically gets anybody on edge, just when you hear Omaha 8, but this comes from one of my favorite listeners, Turdzilla, and he says, I was playing in a pot limit Omaha 8 game already. I hate it. It's pot limit Omaha 8. Makes no sense. And the action was heads up. First player pots on the river, and the remaining player, who is on the phone, asks the dealer to interpret the board for the nut low. The dealer declines to comment, and the player then asks his friend on the phone for advice.
Just like on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
I want to phone a friend. The first player protests, and the floor is called. The floor asks the player to get off the phone. He eventually complies, calls, and loses both high and low. I would have thought the guy should not have been allowed in the hand while on the phone, and once he asked his friend on the phone for advice, that his hand should have been dead.
Yeah, great, great, great call to floor.
Unbelievable.
You know what? And I really like Jody's answer on this one, I think. Here's what Jody says. He says, Poker TDA rule number 4, communication, says players may not talk on cell phones at the table, and leaves the rest of the specifics to the house rules. A cell phone rule exists in almost every poker room in the country. It is different in every room. and it's almost impossible to get players to comply, dealers to enforce, and floor people to rule properly of a cell phone rule. He says, this is an interesting situation considering the advice giver is on the other end of the phone. The floor person has no recourse with that person since they are in the room. Can you imagine, hey, why don't you come on down here? I'll show you what you're... he says, I understand your desire to have the player lose his hand after asking advice from his phone friend. The fact is, almost no poker room is going to kill a player's hand for asking about the board. It'd be the same if one of the players at the table had answered his question. Players not involved in a pot answer questions all the time when they aren't supposed to. My favorite is when players count down on other players' chips that have not been bet. My ruling here would have been a warning to not be on the phone during a hand, and I would explain one player to a hand to this player who is obviously new to the game. My opinion as a player here is I want to play Omaha 8 with people who don't understand the low. His questioning the dealer, then his friend, is proof he doesn't play this game much and is likely going to give away all of his chips. I wouldn't want to see a ruling which could upset our live one and have him leave the game.
All right, I guess I'm not going to get as mad as I thought I might. But here's the deal. To me, the fact that he's on the phone should not have happened. I can't tell you how many times in certain poker rooms where someone's on the phone, the hand's dead. They kill the hand. Right. The dealer kills the hand. So first of all, I want to know what the rule was at that particular establishment. And if they're supposed to be dead, then one, it's dead. Two, he's asking somebody for advice. Now, whether it's one person to a hand and he's getting a warning about it, that's not right, because he could have gotten advice from the guy on the phone, and we'll never know. Of course, it was bad advice because he called and lost both high and low, but he got an unfair advantage. That hand should be dead twice. You know what I mean? It reminds me of the episode of Friends when the grandmother dies twice. That hand should have died twice, to me. And I don't... You know, the other thing, too, is Jody has to cite TDA rules, but they're not for cash games. This was clearly a cash game.
And I think that's the big difference here.
Yeah. It's very frustrating that... I just think that guy should have been reined in way before it even got to that point. And that the hand should have been dead. But...
Yeah, you know, I think what's difficult about this is that we have an agreed-upon set of rules for tournaments, for the most part. I mean, not a lot of rooms don't honor poker TDA, and obviously there's some disagreement about some of the poker TDA rules. But you have that in place. There is no such thing as at least a uniform rule for cash games. And I play mostly tournaments, so obviously anytime you're in a tournament, cell phones automatically kill the hand. Now, that being said, I don't really understand the difference between that and a cash game. Why, in most rooms I'm in, that you can be on the cell phone during a cash game and not a tournament. I guess maybe it's because it's a tournament and there are, you know, other people tied into it. And just, I don't know. It doesn't make the best sense to me. But I have played in rooms where, in tournaments, they will kill your hand if you're on a phone in a tournament. But you're more than welcome to sit there and gab away in the middle of a cash game hand.
Yeah.
So it does come down to the house rule. Now, I mean, I really wish that rooms would not allow this. I mean, you know, I like to text and check my Facebook and all that stuff. But when I'm in a hand, I need to be focused on the hand.
Right.
And not just cell phones or anything like that, but, you know, betting the dogs, getting the cocktail waitress, any of that stuff. That's really the rule that needs to be, is when you have live cards, your focus 100% should be on the pot and the hand. And everything else can wait. You know, she'll bring your Bloody Mary back the second time, you know.
Yeah.
You should have bet the three dog in the seventh race about a half an hour ago. So, yeah, I definitely think that should. But you're right. When you talking to his friend on the phone, I mean, I was joking about who wants to be a millionaire, but really... Hey, what are you going to ask next? Dealer, can you take two cards off the board? I mean, this is just beyond ludicrous, isn't it?
If I pay you a dollar, will you deal me another card, like, and we play nighttime baseball?
Oh, man. So, you know, what's difficult, and this is why I have a lot of respect for floor staff, and dealers, too, but particularly floor staff, because you got to make these tough calls. I mean... All we know when we get these call to floors is what the person that sent it to us is saying in their version, right?
Right.
I would imagine when a floor gets their sizes of the situation, and, you know, as Jody says, it seems like, because this guy doesn't know what a low is, that he is pretty new to this game. He might be new to poker in general. Probably has no idea. I mean, really, how many places can you go now where you can't be on your cell phone? I mean, it's just, it's become legalized rudeness.
Yeah.
Right? You know. So, you know, if people don't know that, they're going to be yapping. So, you know, you don't want to necessarily kill a hand for something like that, but you definitely need to strongly suggest to the player that you can. And I think that's where it gets back to the dealer enforcing it. And again, it gets back to what the house rule is. The house rule is that you're allowed to be on the cell phone. There's nothing a dealer can do about it. But that's why we need the house rule not to be that. But yeah, real frustrating that this could happen this way.
And let's take this one step further. Let's say they say English only at the table.
Yeah,
but the guy's on the cell phone. He's allowed to be on a cell phone, and he starts speaking Italian to his friend, and he tells him what's going on in the hand in Italian because no one else at the table speaks Italian.
That's amore.
You know what I mean? Exactly.
That's the only Italian I know.
So
probably not even Italian.
Really? Well, my last name's you can say Cosenza if you want.
Okay.
But really, okay. So you're allowed to talk on the phone, but the English at the table. You tell me I can only speak English on my phone. What if my grandfather's calling me and he only speaks Italian? I need to talk to him. You know what I mean? There's just so many reasons not to allow cell phones at the table, at least to be talked on. You know, check your email, do whatever you want when you're not in a hand, but you can't text and use your phone and do whatever when you're in a hand to me. And to actually ask the guy on the phone in English in front of everybody, what should I do? The board is ace 3-9-6-4. You know, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Of course, I don't think anyone took it seriously because he didn't tell him his whole cards in front of everybody and do all that. So it was kind of a joke, I'm sure. But right. Still, it doesn't matter. Now you've asked the guy what to do, and the guy is on the other line. We don't know what he said, and it's just a nightmare.
I think this is one of the things that separates the good dealers from the great dealers. Because a great dealer would be very active about that. And as soon as he hears him ask, saying, hey, oh, hey, sir, you can't be asking him. Please put your phone down until the hand's done.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like that happened here. But maybe it didn't happen because the other player was the one that jumped in and said, hey, what the heck's going on?
Yeah, right.
And the floor got called. But, you know, this one is just like everything else in the world. You know, if you treat people the way you want to be treated, then you're not going to have this call the floor.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't want people on the cell phone table, so I'm not on the cell phone at the table.
How many times a week do you and I say, if people just did what they were supposed to do, our lives would be so much easier?
Yes, absolutely.
Same thing here. If people just did what they were supposed to do and they're in the establishment, there wouldn't be call the floors. Of course, then we wouldn't have this juicy segment on the show, so.
That's true,
please keep screwing up, people.
But, you know, at the beginning I said I really liked his answer from Jody. What I liked about it is, and he does this often, but this one particularly I thought was really well, explaining it both from a floor perspective and from a player perspective. And, you know, whether you agree with him or not on the player perspective, that's what I like about Jody is that he makes those floor decisions based on it. Because sometimes they're floor decisions that, based on what you do, can go either way on the player involved. And thinking of it from a player perspective, sometimes you make a better floor call. I'm trying to think of some examples. You know, an example where you want somebody to call. And they make some reason that you or do something where, you know, one of your course actions would be to kill the hand, but that's not good. So it just helps you kind of think it through from a player perspective. And he's right, you know, if you got somebody that doesn't know what the nut low is, you know, I'm at the table until that guy leaves.
Yeah.
You're going to clean up with him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he has to be impartial with his ruling, but he's just trying to make everybody feel better about the situation by saying that in this. Because I wouldn't want him making decisions based on.
He's letting players know maybe this is a situation where you don't want to speak up.
Yeah.
Again, it's a cash game. Now, a tournament, you have to. But it's a cash game. You know, some of us are pre-wired. When we see something wrong, we say something wrong. And I think what he's saying here is that's all right. And there's certainly nothing wrong with pointing out a mistake. But, you know, as a player, you're there to win money. Yeah. And sometimes in a cash game, you might want to keep quiet while stuff is going on because it benefits you as a player.
Yeah.
All right, Terzilla, appreciate the very interesting call of the floor. Obviously, we just gave you some swag a couple weeks ago, but everybody else, remember to send your call of the floor, and if Jody uses it, answers it, and puts it on the show, we'll send you something great, like a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for the Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes Store.
Fewer than 10 hotel rooms remain for the Antioch Poker Tour World Championship, which is July 28th to the August 3rd at the luxurious Hard Rock Punta Cana all-inclusive resort in the Dominican Republic. Book today at AnteUpMagazine.com/World Championship so you don't get shut out of AnteUp's deeply discounted room rates. 15 tournaments now with buy-ins as low as $115. And, of course, the winner of the $1,100 main event appears on the cover of AnteUp Magazine. Plus, you can still win your way there at Dover Downs in Delaware, Sarasota Kennel Club in Florida, and Cypress Bayou in Louisiana.
And don't forget, Downstream Casino Resort will host its 4 States Poker Championship AnteUp Poker Tour event starting this week, May 17th.
Yeah, it starts Friday today.
It's going to run all the way to May 26th. The schedule is posted at AnteUpMagazine.com/downstream. And more details on all AnteUp Poker Tour events can be found at AnteUpPokerTour.com. And if you're going to be there for the main event, say hi, because I will be whiskeying my way all the way to Oklahoma right as soon as we get off the AnteUp Poker Cruise.
And speaking of the cruises, Lee Child has confirmed he'll be the onboard pro for our AnteUp Poker Cruise October 20th to this 27th, the New York City metro area. 7-night cruise, sails to Bermuda, and Lee is going to do his most expansive poker training ever on a cruise. 2 separate tournament and cash game tracks, each with 5 one-hour classes. In December, he'll sail from Tampa to Mexico and Grand Cayman with us, right? He's coming with us, isn't he?
I don't know yet, Pat. But I know we're going, so.
No, I know, but I thought he was going to come on that one, too. So we don't know yet, but we hope he does.
Might.
We got all details on both our cruises, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs and Texas Hold'em Poker Tours at AnteUpCruises.com. All right, AnteUp News Desk time.
Delaware has chosen 888 Holdings to be the provider of its online gaming products. Join 888, and the winning bid is Williams Interactive and Scientific Games Corp., the latter of which is the provider of Delaware's online lottery product.
And the prerequisite was to make sure there were no God modes
exactly.
installed in any of the software. Now they're moving closer. See how that works out. Lawmakers in Oregon may soon consider a bill that would rein in social poker clubs, which have expanded in the Portland area. Patrons pay a cover charge to enter, but the clubs don't rake the cash games or tournaments. That's sad.
Yeah, I mean, as a poker player, it's very sad. You know, I definitely hate to see these clubs get ran in. I mean, like the Great Encore Club, which those folks listen to our show and distribute our magazine, and obviously these lawmakers that are upset about them, on a personal level, I disagree with them. But there is, I guess there's something to be said about having people weigh in on the way they want poker to be available in their locality. Hmm. And obviously the social poker clubs have morphed into something, I think, bigger than what the initial law intended. Perhaps. Now, that doesn't mean it's a bad thing, and obviously some of us think it's a good thing. But I could see this as a case to, hey, let's kind of rethink what we're doing. And, you know, it may not be mad news. I mean, it may turn into a conversation where these become the rules change on them for the benefit of players, you know. Because obviously right now, I've talked to some folks at the Encore, and I mean, it's tough for them to do a lot for their players when they can't break, you know.
Yeah.
They get that $10 and you walk in, if you're there all day, they're barely making any money off you at all. But if it ends up becoming, you know, maybe a little stricter regulation, maybe a little higher taxes for it, but they're able to rake stuff, then that might end up being a good thing for everyone.
Yeah, just the words rein in kind of make me think that it's not going to be a good thing, but... Who knows? We'll see. Hopefully everything works out there.
And finally, in a speech at the United Kingdom's Boarding School Association annual conference, I go every year. Never miss it.
Yeah.
That body's chairman urged members to allow children to explore their curiosities, including playing poker. Christian Heinrich says failure to do so may turn the private schools into quote-unquote exam factories.
Very interesting.
And you see that? Hey, little Scotty, have you gone and played the game of poker yet today? Get off the jungle gym.
No kickball for you.
Explore your curiosity today.
You need to re-raise there.
I think it was interesting that he included that. I mean, obviously boarding school, I mean, are all ages. So, I mean, I don't think he's necessarily suggesting that after milk and nap time in kindergarten, kids pull out the poker chips.
Yeah.
But... he didn't have to throw in playing poker. I mean, he had a couple other examples, but he did. So I find that very interesting.
Cool, very cool. Hey, you know what? We get to wrap up an O'Malley's move today, just in time for the cruise. So let's refresh our memory. Here's the first part.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a 6-12 Omaha 8 table. We bought in for 300 and currently have 225. There's a lot of older players at our table who love to see flops and call bets down with anything. The blinds post, the under-the-gun calls, the plus-one calls, MP folds, and we're next to act with the king of hearts, queen of hearts, jack of diamonds, ten of hearts. These calls in the early positions may be low cards looking to get in for cheap, which means there may be some big cards waiting to flop. We bump it to $6. The hijack folds, but the cutoff makes it $9, and to our surprise, it's folded back around to us. We call, $24 in the pot, minus the rake, and the flop comes the jack of hearts, ten of clubs, three of hearts. We don't mind this flop, an open-ended straight draw and a flush draw, though it's not a nut draw. We put $6 in, and our opponent quickly calls. We don't know much about this guy, other than the fact that he's a regular, an older guy, and chases anything and everything. $36 in there, and the turn is the ace of clubs. Well, there's our nut card, though it puts two flush draws out there. We bet the $12 and get raised to $24. What's going on here? We make it $36, trying to let him know we're serious, and he slows down and calls. There's now $108 in the pot, and the ace of spades comes off on the river. That's ugly. But our attention gets grabbed as the older gentleman in the nine seat, not in the hand, pounds his fist on the table when he sees it. Does this information change anything? What are we going to do?
It don't change a thing for me.
Are you trying to become a YouTube sensation or something? You cut it out.
I just love YouTube. No, seriously, he asked whether this man in the hand pounds his fist on the table. Does this change anything? Yeah, of course not. Absolutely not. I'm going to check call here. There's too much money in the pot to fold, and I certainly don't want to be raised by a boat here. This disgruntled other player likely had an ace, I'm going to guess, just from experience of playing with these type people. But the way this action has gone, I'm not really worried about our opponent having an ace high boat. It's more likely that we're up against a set that boated up because of the ace, and we lose to that as well, too. So it certainly makes it probably less likely that he has a boat because this guy is, you know, trying to audition for the next Samsonite commercial. But it doesn't really change my action, though. I mean, there's nothing else you can do here, I don't think.
You're really taking yourself with that Samsonite commercial reference.
Yeah,
that's like the 70s.
I like to be a man of all generations.
Good God. I agree. This changes nothing for me as far as what that guy did on the table. And as you put it so succinctly, that the fact that he pounded it means he probably has an ace. But to me, all that money's in there. We could have the same hand. I'm check calling. The raise and the turn makes me think we have the same hand. And that it's not a boat. But I could be wrong. It could be one of those weird, he doesn't really understand Omaha here and doesn't realize that the nuts now has changed not changed. And so, I'm just trying to think, because the turn was an ace, right? The turn was an ace.
No,
so
rivers in it. Yes, turn and river.
Yeah, turn and the rivers were aces. So to me, when the turn came and he raises there, it doesn't sound like he has a set to me at that point or two pair, because he when the nuts is now Broadway on that board or whatever, to me it sounds like there's no way this guy would raise a set here now because Broadway got there and everybody's playing high cards and they're playing low cards too, but somebody's gonna have Broadway there, so when he's raising it feels like I have the same hand, but I could be wrong, and it could be somebody doesn't understand the nuts at that point, like the guy who was on the cell phone asking his friend what the low was. Yeah. We could be playing the same guy here, so
absolutely.
To me, I'm gonna check call at the end. All right, let's see what happens.
Hello again. Well, even though there's no low and no flush, Omaha's the game of the nuts, and we just don't have them. We check. Our opponent quickly fires off a $12 bet. Limit poker is as much about saving bets as it is about making them. And even though it feels like we're beat here, we just can't fold our turned nuts gone wrong. We make the call. Our opponent turns over the 4 of clubs, 3 of spades, 3 of diamonds, deuce of clubs. Yuck. That was a big pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, this is what's so hard about limit. It's hard to fold for that one more bet, even if you're sure you're beat. I hope to see you on the film.
All right, well, one nitpick with O'Malley's closing advice. I absolutely can fold on the river and limit if I'm beyond convinced I'm beat. You know, again, it gets back to what he said, you know, saving bets and getting value. So if I'm absolutely convinced that I'm beat beyond any, you know, 99%, I mean, you're never 100%, right? But I don't care if I got to put $12 into a $400 pot. If I'm convinced that I'm beat, that's 12 bucks I can save. Now, I'm not saying I do that very often, because usually you can't be that sure. And certainly in this situation, we're nowhere near convinced that we're beat. Very likely that we could have had the same hand or even win here. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to put that bet in. But to me, the decision here is to bet out or check call. And I think we made the right decision, even though we lost the hand.
Yep, I totally agree. I think a call is correct here. And I agree with you, too. I think that there are actually instances where in limit, I believe I'm beat. I will fold on the end there. But it's a lot easier to fold in no limit than it is in limit. But I have been able to do that. And
it doesn't happen often. I mean, it really does not happen often.
Right.
But I mean, I'm trying to think of an example where it does. I mean, usually it's a fairly new player that has been playing not just ABC, but ABCDEF poker.
Yeah.
And just comes alive on the river when a card comes that, you know, at that point, you just feel confident that they have what they have. Now, if you're playing against really good players, I don't think that ever really comes into that case. But, you know, I know we like to say on limit here, you know, if you're right one and every 12 times, then it pays for it. But I like to be able to extend that 12th time to make it, you know, give me one more shot at getting my money back.
And the reason I check call here is the raise and a turn. The raise and a turn makes me think we have the same hand. Because why would he raise with a set of threes when it's ace, king, jack, whatever it is, three? Why would he raise there? And then when we re-raise again, he calls. At that point now, I'm like, okay, he doesn't have the same hand. But, you know, I mean, that at that point, it's like you just don't know. It's too confusing for me to know if he actually has a full house.
Well,
so.
Yeah, and this is why I like Omaha 8, because it really messes with you. And this is why it's tough to put people in hands in Omaha 8. If we see what his final hand was, I absolutely would have been, if I was him, raising and re-raising there.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have the nuts, but we pretty much any low card comes, and we've got the nut low. We have a club draw now, although it's pretty weak, obviously, as well as straight draws. So there's a lot working for us here, and I'm definitely going to get my money in now. I'll be on the come. I mean, that's what you do in Omaha.
Yeah.
If this is high only, obviously it changes everything. But the fact that it's Omaha 8, you got to consider those low things. And, I mean, here's the other thing about this, too, this flop. It's Jack 10 Trey, we bet out, so if we're betting out, we're probably not doing that with all low cards, obviously.
Right.
So I think he's got to think that the low is going to be live no matter what it is at that point if it hits, and that we don't have a low, that we have a high-only hand. So, you know, he's really raising, feeling fairly confident that he's going to get half the pot and maybe scoop. So it gives you a lot more power at that point.
Yeah, and that's the thing, the 8 part of this game is what throws me for a loop on that turn, that raise. You know, is he betting on the come? Is he betting to protect his hand with the Broadway like me? So when he just calls after that, then I have to start thinking about he might be betting a low hand. But if he backed into a boat, that's why I'm checking and calling on the river. So yeah, very interesting hand. Very interesting hand.
Yeah, and I think this is a common problem, I think, in Omaha. And even if you play for a long time, you still make the mistake. You know, if I get a high-only hand, this flop comes, I immediately say, yes, we dodge the low, because there's only one low card there. No one's going to be sticking around with it. And then, in some reason, you flip that switch in your brain, and you turn the low off.
Yeah.
And you don't even think about the rest of the hand. Now you're thinking about improving your high hand, and next thing you know, you look down and, oh, man, the low got there. Which it didn't in this case, but...
Well, hats off to O'Malley. That was a real interesting hand, especially for being an 08 like that. That's yeah, that's not his bread and butter either, so...
Yeah.
Nice job, O'Malley.
The World Series of Poker kicks off in less than 2 weeks. I can barely hold my excitement in.
We're playing every event.
Yes, exactly. No, but I don't mean to make that sound like I'm not excited. Other people are probably more excited. Because I won't be there in 2 weeks. I'll be somewhere else.
That's right.
But as they do every year, World Series officials hosted a media conference call this week to point out some of the highlights of this year's event and answer questions, sometimes very intelligent ones from our fellow reporters, sometimes kind of laughable.
Yeah.
And as always, Anti-E-Up is going to summarize. Boy.
Anti-E-E-Up.
As always, Anti-E-Up is going to mess up the words that... so beautifully crafted on the notes. And as Andy always does, we summarize the call even further to give our trusted fans just the highlights of the highlights.
Now, this is the part where I fall asleep because I wasn't with the conference. I was working today. So just let me know when it's over. And
no, this is where you need to test how well I was listening.
Oh, yeah, that's
because
true.
Because you can answer follow-up questions, and then I'll either have to bluff and come up with some ridiculous answer that might be right or might not be right, or admit, you know, hey, I was catching up on my newspaper reading during the morning stretches of the call.
All right, we'll see.
All right, well, we'll get kicked off with some boring general information here. As everybody knows, 62 bracelet events this year, more than 450 tables available in the entire convention center. And they do have other areas available for overflow, including, obviously, the Rio, normal Rio Poker Room will be continuing to operate, as always. Did want to remind everybody about the daily deep stacks. I think they started this last year, I think, right?
Yeah, at least,
really kind of a combating, you know, all the other tournament series that popped up around the city and try to keep people at the Rio rather than get them scattered out around the city. Every day at 3, 6, and 10, they'll be running these events. For around roughly $200, I think. I didn't hear the exact buy-ins, but certainly affordable. They are expecting, not to be surprised, expecting lots of open-faced Chinese cash games this year. Obviously, that trend is still continuing, and that ought to be interesting.
I'll be nowhere to be found.
Nowhere near it. and very interesting, I thought, they said that officials have been monitoring other open-faced Chinese poker tournaments around the country. There haven't been a lot, but there have been a couple lately. And they definitely have been watching those and seeing how they work and then talking to players. And they continue to make adjustments to the open-faced Chinese tournament, which is on the schedule, which we'll talk about later. But I thought that was one of the more interesting things at the call. Not that I would think that they don't spend a lot of research time on this kind of stuff, but it kind of speaks to the fact that they didn't immediately want to throw this on the bracelet schedule this year. That they wanted to kind of have a year to kind of work out the kinks and see how popular it worked out. And they're working out the kinks even before it starts.
And hopefully by this time next year, it'll be dead and they won't have to worry about it. Stupid game.
This year they're going to be offering free Wi-Fi for all players, pending approval. I'm not sure exactly what the approval is that needs to come, but that's going to be kind of a nice bonus for folks. It's going to be easier for us in the media, too, because every day we had to look up for the new password for the day, right?
Yeah.
To get the media access. But and obviously there are a couple questions about the fact that, you know, online poker has started back up in Nevada and, you know, whether people are going to be allowed to play online poker while they're at the table. And they just reiterated that the rule is on electronic devices, as long as you are not in the hand, you can use electronic devices. But they did say, obviously, if you're slowing the game down, tournament directors do reserve the right to intervene. And obviously, if they feel there's some sort of cheating going on by using those devices, they can also intervene. So it's one of those things, as long as you're using them responsibly, you can use them. When you start using them non-responsibly, then they're going to put the hammer down on you.
That's good.
Obviously, people, I think, are a little bit more cognizant of safety now after the Boston Marathon bombing up there. And so they were asked about that. They did say, obviously, we're not going to give you or the bad guys our strategies on making sure that the tournament remains safe. But they did say that bags and backpack are still permitted. I'm guessing some poker rooms are banning these now. But they are still permitted there. But they did say that there might be some random searches of that, so players need to be aware of the fact that while you can bring your backpack in, you know, maybe some real cop walking around that's going to pokey-pokey in it.
I predict the return of the little baggy thing that the guys wear on their waist. What are those things called? Satchel bag things. Those, I don't know what they're called, but...
Oh, I can't believe they can't come up with the fanny packs.
Yeah, the fanny packs. I predict that they may return to the fashion conscious. You know, my favorite thing was, I think, was it Seinfeld that said it looks like a snake swallowed a rat and just wrapped around your waist or something. But really, I mean, think about all the poker players that have backpacks. I'm one of them, too. I usually, especially when I'm on the road covering something or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to have my backpack for all the stuff that I'm doing. Oh, my God, if they canceled that, just forget it. People would be
going
crazy.
Well, even beyond that, I mean, I don't think you necessarily need it for any tournament. But these tournaments, these are all, I mean, like we already mentioned, 2-3-day tournaments.
Yeah.
You're there a long time. And, you know, I think it's fair for people to be able to bring their own food and beverage so they don't have to go and, you know, overpay for a slice of pizza, you know. And, of course, you're bringing in, you know, phones and chargers and things like that. I mean, people got to bring a lot of stuff. So it's going to be extremely inconvenient if rooms start banning those kind of things. I think you're going to see a real precipitous decline in participation. So people are going to say, hey, if I can't take my stuff, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Particularly in Nevada, where you can play online now.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's going to skip a World Series event because of it, but, you know, in general. But what I'm wondering, I really hope it doesn't go this way. You know, for a while, the Daytona 500, which my dad takes me to every year, you had to have a clear bag.
Oh, man.
You know how hard it is to buy a clear backpack?
Not one that doesn't have Dora the Explorer on it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, and I understand it. You got, you know, couple hundred thousand people coming through there, and you can't, you know, do a really good bag check, but if it's clear, then, you know, people can see into it. But I'm not sure a lot of people are going to want their business just being on display.
Yeah.
Because of that way, you know.
Of course, that's our new business, right, is to set up a little kiosk outside in the parking lot with clear
bags.
Yeah,
selling them, yep. Now, they did say they're really trying to get the buzz going early on this year's World Series. They did admit that they did not do a good job with this last year. It took some while for momentum to build. And getting people talking about it. So what they did, they purposely put a number of small events at the front of the tournament, particularly on that first weekend, as well as some other interesting ones like the casino employees is always the kickoff tournament. And then they had, I think it's a 5K, might be a 6 max, maybe in Omaha early on, to get the pros excited about it. But they definitely want to get the buzz going better this year. And even before that, they said that they are expecting an even bigger turnout this year than the last 2 years. The last 2 years were records as well, too, despite the last loss of online poker. And this year, just based on the fact that they've been increasing every year, but also they're very encouraged by the early hotel bookings out there, they said. So expecting big crowds. A couple of special events that they talked about a little bit. I think we talked with Antonio Esfandiari a couple weeks ago. They're not doing the big $1 million big one for the one drop this year, but they are doing 2 1 drop charity events, and they're hoping to raise a combined $1 million between those events this year. And then this is something that I had not heard before and I thought was very interesting. They are resurrecting the Carnival of Poker.
That's pretty cool.
Now, this predated my interest in poker, so I really had never heard of it. But it sounds like it was really a big deal back when I did it. They said it was the second largest tournament series in the world for the 3 years that it ran, which is 1998 to 2000. Did you know about this?
I do recall seeing it. I do recall seeing it, like, on Hendon Mob, I think, results and things like that. And actually,
I think I did see it in there.
And some of the historical references, like in the old World Series. Gabe Kaplan versions. You know, they may have made some references to it then. So I have heard of that term. I do, but I haven't like seen anything from it. But yeah, I've heard of it.
Well, apparently it was a big deal, and a lot of people that played it and really loved it and were sad that it disappeared. But they're bringing it back. It's going to run concurrently with the World Series this year to Rio. 21 events. They're going to price it using the World Series Poker Circuit pricing strategy. So, you know, lead-up events would be $365, all the way up to the main event, which would be $1,625. They said events will be on Monday and Tuesday mornings. And then on some Monday and Tuesday evenings, it was kind of complicated how they presented it, but mixed games will be part of it in the evenings. And then after the initial day ones of the main event are done, then they're going to be running even more events as part of the Carnival. The $5,000 open-faced Chinese non-bracing event in the World Series that we mentioned is actually going to be part of this, so I guess it's going to be part of both series at the same time.
Huh.
If you win one of the Carnival Poker events, you're going to get a gold and silver medallion, and they're going to keep track of points through these 21 events. And if you're in the top 10 point earners, you're going to split $100,000.
This is just getting to be too much. I mean, all right. So, you're a bracelet winner? Oh, I only want a circuit ring. Well, I want a gold and silver medallion. What's next? Like, all right, I want the copper nose ring. I mean, how many different ways do we have to categorize our victories with these trophies, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, it's kind of cool, but who's going to wear a gold and silver medallion to the poker
ring? Oh, Flavor Flav?
Yeah, boy!
Now, I totally agree with what you're saying, but at the same time, I think the World Series brand's kind of backed in the corner here. You know, you have the bracelets, you can't mess with that, right? So they did the circuit. Well, we don't want to give out bracelets because that devalues the bracelets out there. So let's come up with some. Oh, rings. Rings would be cool. Yes, let's do rings. And now you got a third thing now that you got to give something out. So, oh my gosh, we gave out bracelets and rings. Now what do we do? And I'm sure someone's saying, how about a medallion?
What the hell? Oh, just give them a plaque or a trophy or just give them the cash that it costs to go buy your own medallion. I mean, I know you want to distinguish yourself, but come on.
It's a medallion event. That's how we say it. It's a bracelet event. Or it's a ring event. Well, I gotta win my bracelet. I gotta win my ring. You can't say I gotta win my cash.
It's a plaque event. How about that plaque? Crazy.
Gold plated toothbrush.
Yeah, awesome. It's a PVC clear plastic, you know, things remembered event.
They did spend a little time talking about some personalities, obviously, in light of Doyle Brunson's tweet. They did thank him for his long association with the main event. They said they fully expect him to see him on site playing cash games during the series. They are holding out hope that they might be able to talk him into playing one more main event. They actually indicated that they had to talk him into playing last year, which I don't remember I had knowing before. But
yeah.
But definitely, they want to try to milk him for what they can now as he's in the sunset years.
Yeah, you know, he's got that guy, that 95-year-old guy who keeps showing up every year. His grandson shows up with him and everything. So, hey, you know what? Come on, Doyle. One last time. If they pay for you to go in, just go out.
Use your one time on this.
That's right.
And, of course, it's been 10 years since Chris Moneymaker won the main event. And, it's one of those kind of false anniversaries, in my opinion. You know, what was different from 10 years versus 9 or 8 or 11 or whatever. But, you know, that's what people do, right? But they are, World Series organizers are trying to get a hold of him, and they do plan, assuming that he's willing, to set up some sort of ceremony or event during the World Series.
We know how to get a hold of him. Just ask us. We'll take care of it. What the hell?
I should have called on the media. And they're like, say your name and your question. I'm like, dude, I can hook you up.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, now the big thing that a lot of our fans talked about last year was the television and live streaming coverage, and they said that ESPN will produce 40 hours of television coverage this year before the November 9, and that's going to kick off July 23rd with, I believe, a World Series Poker event over in Europe, followed by coverage of the World Series Poker Circuit National Championship that's going to be in New Orleans. And then the Las Vegas coverage will begin to air on August 6th. And again, like last year, it will be only the main event. No lead-up events will be on the ESPN broadcast. But they will be broadcasting every hand of the final table when the November 9 comes up. But of course, in lieu of all that, they are doing a lot of live streaming. They will live stream every final table. Every day they're going to pick one of the events and do some enhanced live streaming of that, which will have some whole cards, probably some other doodads and things. They said 33 of the events will use, the final tables of the 33 events will use the RFID technology.
Yeah.
On a 30-minute delay. They got a lot of chuckles, but they wanted to make it very clear that there's no God mode in this RFID, so you know, no one's going to know anything that they shouldn't know. And they did try to speak to the fairness, too, that they're only going to show whole cards of players who have entered the pot. So, I mean, if you look at your hand and you fold it, they're not going to keep putting your cards on there so people find out what hands you're folding.
Right.
And they're only going to do this for final tables and not for feature tables, so you don't put... you know, some players aren't at a disadvantage because they happen to be chosen for the feature table, where other players aren't.
Cool.
You know, last year was the first year that you could actually bet on the World Series of Poker, so they have some questions about that. They're actually not going to be doing live betting on individual events this year. Obviously, they will for the November 9. What they said was because of the time it took to calculate and post odds and then allow bettors to wager, the experiment last year wasn't terrifically popular. And so, obviously, they'll do it for the November 9. I kind of, you know, thought about, you know, poking and asking a question about what they could do, you know, like to do with golf, you know, where you just put a 20 people up there with odds on winning the main event and then a field bet. I guess at that point, the field bet would be, you know, you'd have to put up a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, a field bet. Oh, my God.
But I guess you could probably do it for player of the year, maybe, right?
Yeah, it's possible.
It'd be a little bit better, but. But they didn't talk about that, so I guess it's possible that that might happen. But completely separate from that, folks that want to have a little bit of fun this year can draft their own fantasy team at fantasypokermanager.com and have some fun with that. And then finally, they kind of look to the future a little bit. They did announce that there will be 22 World Series of Poker Circuit events this year. The season's going to last a little longer. It's going to start a little earlier, beginning August 8th at Foxwoods.
That's weird, because they just had one, too, so they're having it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, had it in March, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like 6 months away or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Five months difference. It's a pretty quick turnaround. Usually it's a year away from each other.
Well, I mean, they might do two at Foxwoods.
So. Oh, yeah, they might do two. Well, that's weird, too, right? The two circuit events at one place.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to wait and see. Yeah. But they are going to post that schedule earlier than they normally do sometimes.
Which is good, because I do it every year. We're always begging them to get it out early.
And so then like August 7th, they're like, come see us tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, everybody's very interested when the WSOP.com Real Money Online site's going to launch. They were a little cagey about that. They did say it definitely will be launching this summer. Just not sure exactly when. And obviously, when it launches, will depend on will determine whether they can do any kind of online satellites for this year's World Series. But they did say once the site's fully deployed, that's definitely a huge part of their plan is to run a number of satellites for the event. Obviously, and they also said they don't anticipate a time when all events will have re-entries. You know, re-entry events are taking the world by storm now. Though, obviously, there are several more events this year that will allow it. They were pretty clear that they need to be selective. They don't think all events work with re-entries. And that's actually kind of interesting. I hadn't really heard anybody say that. And as part of that, they were very emphatic that the main event will never be a re-entry event. Which I think is kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense, though. You know what they need to have? They need to have a multi-day one re-entry open-faced Chinese poker event. That way they can just get every single trendy thing out in the open in one event to make everyone happy.
Turbo heads up.
Yeah, unbelievable. As soon as there's something new, just cling to it as soon as possible. But no, you're right, though. Re-entries are really becoming popular, and it's fine. It just builds up the prize pool anyway, so...
Yeah, I've never really understood why people are too upset about the re-entry. I mean, I can see with the main event, and that's kind of sticky, because the main event, you know, you kind of want to get those numbers up and get that prize pool up. That's the reason you do it. But I think there's something
pure.
Historical. Yeah, pure. Yeah, yeah. Trying to find that word. That the main event, you get one shot at it.
Yeah.
And if you're out, you're out.
And the numbers are big already. You don't need to increase the numbers to a 6,000 player tournament. So
yeah, exactly. It's particularly one that runs that long as it is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But definitely it'll be another interesting series this year. And again, I always like to give them credit for they do spend a lot of time making sure that the event's fresh every year,
yeah,
as much as it can be. And in the face of tons of comments and criticism from folks. And So definitely looking forward to being out there at the end of June, and hopefully we'll see some of our listeners out there, and hopefully we'll have some success.
And one final note, I had zero follow-up questions, so nice job.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Got a new listener sitting in the hand of week, Chris.
Nice.
He said he stumbled upon it when he works the graveyard shift at work.
Yeah, that's a lot of people listen to us then.
Of course, yeah, I've got nothing else to do. Oh, man, my Pandora, I've skipped six times now. What am I going to do? Oh, okay, we'll find a podcast. It was Annie Epstein. Starts with an A. Top of the list. But he says in the past month and a half, he's covered 25-plus of our past episodes. Kind of slow, I think.
Yeah, that's
normally, our binge listenership is much more than 25 in the past month.
Yep.
But he loves the podcast! Exclamation point. We appreciate that. And wants us to keep up the excellent work, so we're going to have to figure out whether we can with his hand of the week he sends in. It comes from Kyle in New Braunfels, Texas. Is it Braunfels?
Never heard of it.
I've heard of it. I don't know how to pronounce it. But
okay.
I'm sure somebody will let me know. He was playing a single table sit-and-go with some local poker regulars. Down to four players fairly late in the tournament. And our hero was the chip leader. Obvious brag. And he was on the button with queen of clubs, jack of clubs.
Okay.
There was one limper, and it comes to us. What do we do?
I'll probably raise. I'm in position. I'm the chip leader. Only four of us left. I might as well flex a little of my muscle here. Plus, if you're going to play this hand, you might as well... Suited connectors, suited Broadway connectors. You don't have anybody showing any real strength. You might as well try to take control of this hand, since you're going to have the last betting for the rest of the way. So maybe I'd raise here, maybe 3 or 4X.
Yeah, it's a hand that has a lot of possibilities as well, too.
Yeah.
Being positioned with our chip stack. So, absolutely. Okay, well, our hero decided to raise 3X. And the other players fold, and the original limper repops it. Doubles our bet.
Interesting. So does that mean that our table has a reputation of being loose, and this guy knew someone would raise behind him, and he wanted to repop it with a big hand? That's what it seems like. Or does he just not believe us and likes his little pair or something? I don't know. But just doubling our bet, too, has us kind of scared, too, especially since he's going to be out of position the rest of the hand. You'd think he'd want to take it down now if he's going to pull a move like that. So, very interesting. Very interesting. I would just call this repop.
Okay. At this point, I don't want to get into some kind of standoff here with this guy.
Yeah, not with that. Not with those two cards either. I mean, that's not that great.
We made a very good raise based on the information. Now we raised, and our hand does have a lot of potential still. So, we'll call this this raise, and then... and then hope that the flop is juicy for us.
Yeah.
Our hero says, in position and playing with this player multiple times before, I felt like I had a good read on his rages. For the re-raise, and I make the call. He doesn't yet tell us what those...
Oh, thanks for not telling me what you think this guy could have.
Yeah, it may come out later on. We'll see.
Of course, I don't think we really need to know. I mean, I think we know this guy has set us up with something pretty big.
I mean, we're not going to fold for an extra bet here.
Right.
I think. And we're heads up, so, I mean, we don't have to worry. The flop doesn't have to hit us as hard as it would if we were five or six people in the flop.
Yeah.
Or, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So we do make the call. The flop comes king of clubs, seven of clubs, four of clubs. Ricky Tikki Tavi. Flop the flush, baby.
Or as I say it, Ricky Tikki Taffy. Wow, that's very nice.
The villain checks to us.
That's very nice. It's second nuts.
Doesn't get much better than this, does it?
No, not much. Okay, so he checked to us, so I have no problem betting here, because here's the thing. I don't mind betting and letting a card peel off, because if he has, like, the ace of clubs in his hand, one, I think he might have bet, unless he's going to, you know, check raise me, because he apparently likes to trap like that with the right, way he did preflop. But even so, the odds of him having two clubs in his hand and the ace of clubs on somebody who would pull the move that he pulled, probably not in his range. In his range there, I would think he may have a club in his hand. So I have no problem betting about half the pot or so. I think that's plenty. I mean, I don't want to check behind and then slow play this, because, like you said, he could have the ace of clubs. I want to get some money in now, especially if he maybe has aces with the ace of clubs. You want to know that he can't fold, but you hope that he gets his money in bad. So,
well,
I don't mind betting.
This is a great spot to bet here. I mean, not only did we flop the flush, which is always awesome, and it's the second nut flush at this point, right? Which is awesome. No one really gives you credit for it. You know, as the villain checks, now you bet. He's not really going to think that you flopped. He might be cautious, obviously, but I don't think he's really going to give you credit for it. So, yeah, you're probably going to get paid off a ton of times by this bet. So I'm not worried about chasing him out of the pot or anything like that. I think this is a good shot where it looks like we're trying to take control because he checked to us. And if he raises us, great. I think it's unlikely he has his beat right now. I don't see any downside to betting at all here.
Yeah, no, I don't either. I mean,
and I think the problem with not betting is you're losing a street of value.
Yeah, and there's no way you can pinpoint his range to a club, ace of clubs. So you just can't pinpoint that. But whether you could or couldn't, I don't see any reason not to bet here. If I knew he didn't have a club in his hand, just absolutely knew it, I might consider checking just to let him catch up a little bit. But even then, I don't see any reason not to bet here, especially the way it came down and we had raised and then had to recall his re-raise. So I don't mind betting here. I'd bet about half the pot.
Okay. Our hero bets 3/4 of the pot. Normally, I would say that's too much, but it almost looks like we don't want to call, which is kind of interesting.
I mean, I wouldn't fault him for 3/4 of the pot bet. That's not that bad. I mean, that's fine. It's just, you know, you got to know who you're playing here. You know what I mean? Yeah. If that's something where he may look at that bet and think that we are overbetting to try to protect our hand against the flush, then he may just call, or if he has a club, he may shove. Who knows? But either way, half, two-thirds, three-quarters, whatever. Just don't overbet the pot, because then you're risking more than you have to, and you're risking a chance of losing somebody.
Okay, we are instantly re-raised. I don't know whether he said how much it was that he raised. No, he doesn't. But we were re-raised.
That's tough, because you don't know what he's re-raising to. That kind of hurts, but... okay. Well, I don't know what the re-raise is, so I don't know what my re-raise would be. I don't know if I'm going to shove on this guy. We had pretty big stack going in, right? We're the chip leader, so...
We had a chip leader, yeah. And I believe he was the other big stack.
Oh, great.
Let's see. It looks like we have 35 big blinds left right now, and he has squiggly 30.
Oh, great. So we can get hurt pretty bad by this. Well, it really would help to know how much he re-raised, since we don't know. Here's the stance that I'm taking. I don't know if I'm going to get it all in here, because, one, I don't know how much he has. But, two, I'd like to peel one off, and then I can sort of be in position for what he does if a club does come. And sort of call maybe or something. My problem is that if I get it all in here now, he's going to gladly want to see two cards with the ace of clubs in his hand if he has it.
Yeah.
Or if he has a set. If he has a set, he's got 10 outs instead of just the whatever, 8, 6, 7, whatever the hell it is now that we know that we have two of the clubs in our hand. So he'd have, you know, what, 7 outs. He'd have more outs to a boat. So... really, I'd like to see a card peel off that isn't a club and doesn't pair the board before I decide to get it in. Only give him one card to make that decision. So I'm not inclined to get it all in, but I certainly am not going to just call if it's, you know, I don't know. I feel like I need to re-raise here again just because of what hand we have. And this guy seems to want to get it in with us. I'm hoping he just has aces with the ace of clubs. And are the odds playing our favor? I don't know.
Yeah, I think what made my decision for me is that I got the feeling that this guy wants to get it in.
Yeah.
You know, he raised his preflop, he checked, now he check raises on the flop. I think he wants to get it in. And at this point, there's only one hand that has his beat.
Yeah.
And if he wants to get it in, I'm going to oblige him, because if we peel one off, he may not want to get it all in. And I'd rather get it all in right now. Obviously, I know that's dangerous, because if he does have a set, you know, he's got outs to beat us. If he has the ace of clubs, he's got outs to beat us. If he does miraculously have the ace high flush already, then you know, we're toast. But all those things, I, you know, if he's drawing against us and we go all in here, he's making a bad call,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And so the only good call he could make is if he has made flush already, and then I mean, if that's the case, there's no way we're going to get out of this hand without getting it all in anyhow, right?
And I can't put him on two clubs, the ace of clubs in my hand.
I mean, it's just so, you know, I mean, that's a true cooler at that point. But again, even if he does, we're going to get it all in at some point. So I don't even think that's a worry to me at this point.
But when you have the ace of clubs in your hand, and in this instance, the way it came down, when he did that limp re-raise thing, mm-hmm. it's got to be a powerful hand. And he can't have two clubs in his hand with an ace unless it's the ace 10 of clubs. Right. And he wouldn't be doing that with the ace 10 of clubs, that pre-flop action. So you got to feel like it's just one ace of clubs.
He might. There's some people in podcasts that like to play those hands a little stronger.
But not that way, though. I never played it that way.
Well, it's four-handed, too.
That's true.
So, I mean, it does change a little bit. But you're right. It's unlikely. And, I mean, that's a good way of looking at it. It would have to be ace 10.
Yeah.
Really.
Or worse.
Yeah. So, at this point, you know, I just, you know, he, you know, I feel like, you know, Jack Nicholson, he wants to call. And if he wants to call, I want him to call. If I thought that this player might be scared off by that, then obviously at this point I want to get as much value out of his hand as possible.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't go all in. But everything that I'm reading here makes me think that he wants to get it in. And if he wants to get it in, I'm going to roll out the red carpet for him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. I don't mind getting it in. I just, like I said, it would have helped to know what the bet, the raise,
exactly.
and everything was.
Yeah.
Still, he wants to get it in.
I think it's pretty significant here. I mean, we it was a 3x. Actually, turned out to be what, 6x probably pre-flop that we called.
Yeah.
And then we bet 3/4 of that pot now, and then raise. So even if it's a min raise, it's pretty significant at this point, I think, considering our stats.
It's 16. It would be 16 big bets that he would have made. So yeah, it probably is. Again, though, I just don't know what. Chip leader and 35 big blinds, that'd be 16, be half your stack. So yeah, it probably is enough to get it all in.
Okay, our hero says the ace of clubs is definitely in his range here. Both me holding the queen of clubs and jack clubs, and his re-raise, I really can't see him hitting the flush with ace 10 of clubs or lower.
That's what
with this re-raise pre-flop. See, yeah. You guys are sharing your brain. That's pretty scary.
That's
for our hero. And he says, I've never seen him play a hand like that either. Which helps. So I narrowed his range to the ace of clubs and king queen offsuit or a bigger medium pair. I think I'd definitely throw a set in there.
Yeah, I would throw a set, and I wouldn't say a medium pair. I mean, unless it's a set of sevens, I wouldn't throw a medium pair in there now. Okay. The way he's playing his hand, it's he has to have a club in his hand to check raise here. You know, if he doesn't have a club, he would have bet to protect his hand, I think. So to check raise, I feel like he's got to have like ace king, ace queen. Not very, even ace queen. It would have to be ace queen with the ace of clubs. But if
I think ace king is very, you know, ace king with the ace of clubs.
Yeah, that sounds really
very,
plausible.
Very plausible hand have here, and the way he's playing it too. You know, you got top pair, top kicker, and you got the enough flush draw. You know,
right.
So here says it's decision time. I definitely believe he has the ace of clubs in his drawing. If he has something like king and hit a set and doesn't have a club, I can't see him calling by shove. If he's not holding a club on that board, I was sitting about 35 big blinds and he was the other big stack at squiggly 30 big blinds.
Well, I just want to disagree with the King thing. Obviously, he's not going to have a club in his hand, but if he has a set, he's not going anywhere with that board. That board doesn't mean anything to him. Three clubs means nothing to him. One, he's never going to put you on the full flush already, and if he does, he's got outs to beat you to a flush, more outs than if he just had the ace of clubs still.
Exactly, yeah.
So the board pairs, it's not going to be a club. It's the can't. So I don't agree with that part of it, but go ahead, whatever you were saying.
Okay. I was just reading. I'm not saying it. our hero chooses to shove, and he instantly calls and turns over the ace of clubs, King X.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So the turn is a blank, and the river, of course, brings another club, and the tournament is all but over for me.
Oh, come on, you still have five big blinds.
My question is this. Was shoving to attempt to push him off the draw the proper play? I mean, even if he calls three-fourths of the times, I win the hand. But on the other hand, if I simply call his re-raise and turn comes a blank, I feel like I would have another and better chance to push him off his draw with only one card to come. I spoke with him after, and he pretty much stated there's no way he was coming off the hand. Taking the second route also allows me the chance to make a difficult fold if another club comes, which I feel like I may have been able to do with the range I put him on. So which is more correct, shoving with the made hand and trying to push him off, or slowing down and giving his hand another chance to get there and have to make a hard fold to lay down a significant pot? I'm looking at a cash game. A shove sounds better. Make him gamble to reduce odds. If he hits it, chalk it up to variance and buy back in. But a tourney, of course, there's no coming back once gone.
Very interesting. Well, I think we kind of explored both those things. I talked about trying to maybe make a call there and then see the turn, let it peel off, be a safe card, then shove. But as we pointed out, when we bet out and he check raised us, I'm certainly not going to call 50% of my stack just to try to get the chance of putting 15 more big blinds in on the river before the river comes. You know what I mean? It would have helped if we had more bets than that in our stack, I think. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But to me, it felt like, getting a blank on the turn, which did happen here, would have probably helped him to fold. But the guy's got top pair, nut flush draw, one card to go. He may still think he's good with that hand. He may think that you're doing the same thing with the queen of clubs in your hand, king, queen, with the queen of clubs. You know what I mean?
It's dramatically different with the fact that he has the king to go with that.
Yeah. If it was like ace 10, then he gets it go maybe. But even then, he still has it's tough. He does a nut flush draw and top pair, top kicker. So I don't know if you get him off that hand, but there is some value, or at least it's plausible that playing it that way where you're trying to peel one off and then let it go on the turn.
Yeah, I really like the fact that both he independently came up with that, because that's something I hadn't thought about. I mean, I was just thinking, hey, the guy wants to give me his money, I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
But there definitely is some reason to think about, giving him essentially a free two shot at it. Not really free, but guaranteeing him two shots, I guess is a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
Then make a decision with only one shot left at it.
Of course, you know what's going to happen anyway. And this, because we have position and he's acting first, if we just called his check raise on the turn, he probably shoves anyway. Because it looks like we're drawing, and then you're stuck having to call anyway. So either way, I don't think in this particular instance you're getting away from this hand at all any point. So, tough hand. Yeah, I hate that. I hate when you flop the flush, but you do it with smaller cards, and you just know somebody's sticking around. Especially when you're playing limits, even worse.
But here's again, as he put him on that hand, we all put him on, put him on that possibility, and if he turned his cards face up, I'm still making that call.
Yeah, because you got the best hand.
Absolutely. So, it's just bad luck, or variance, whatever you want to call it. But
he's only got seven outs now, because we have two of the clubs in our hand, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And think of that, if you would have won that too, I mean, then you would have been at 65 big blinds. We don't know everybody else is. You're crushing everybody at that time. They're going to have to.
And it's three-handed,
incredibly lucky, or just really outplay you for you to lose that tournament at that point. So, all right, Kyle, we appreciate you finding the show, liking it so much that you sent us a hand of the week, and we are going to return the favor by sending you a beautiful classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Ask about the Anti-Up logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping. And remember to send your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
I'd like to thank my partner for sitting through that news conference today while I did some other work and saved the show and keep me awake. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.